You're listening to RPP 98.7, Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone. Good morning, Nan.
Morning.
We're heading for a top of 13 degrees.
It's going to be the coldest week or something, isn't it, in Melbourne?
Yeah. I know. Really. Oh. How was your weekend?
Yeah, it was good, but cold. it was fantastic. It was my birthday.
Yes.
So went and saw Maxon. Mm-hmm. At the Paris Cat Cafe, Jazz Cafe. And it was, she was amazing. Mm. Yeah, but she seriously needs a stadium. Like, I think she's the new Australian Adele.
I agree.
You know, totally. We've got to back this girl.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was really lovely.
Well, you sound like you had a really good weekend.
Yeah, back into it now, though. Yeah. How about you? What did you do?
I cleared out the garage. It was really exciting. And I've just realised that...
Very exciting.
I'm 49 for the last 25
years... You have accumulated.
Now, this is scary. For the last 25 years, I've accumulated all these spiritual books, self-help books, and I can't believe how much money I've spent over the years trying to work out who I am. Mm. And anyway, so I thought I'd do a really good deed and send them off to Vinnie's and... Mm-hmm. And give another person an opportunity to read it for free. So that's what I've done.
Yeah.
And thousands and thousands of dollars just going out the door, out the garage door.
Into someone else's.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, but it's really cleansing, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, it's
that, time.
Yeah. And it just, I don't know why, but whenever you just feel so much better in yourself, don't you? It's not like you're... So it allows more energy to come in.
Exactly. Room for more.
Yeah.
Things. I don't buy books much anymore though, do you?
No.
It's weird. I used to buy them every week.
Mm. Is that a social media thing? Are we getting enough from, do you know what I mean, that instant kind of hit
of
information?
So. Yeah. Yeah, I don't feel the desire to even buy one.
And a lot of people download books too, don't they, onto their iPads and things like that. Mm. Now we have
An
the most,
show.
I know, yes, we have the famous, amazing right brain lawyer in the room today, Davina. So, Davina, thank you very much for coming on today.
Thanks Welcome. To both of you for having me.
Yeah.
It was so funny. I was trying to get here to have a chat to Davina before we started. And Davina and I always seem to do things in a hilarious way. And I found that there was this dog that looked like just about a horse, a tiny horse, galloping down the road. So while I was meant to be in the studio, I was literally trying to get this massive dog in the boot of my car and calling the owner on the way to the studio, driving at about a million miles an hour to get here on time and make sure the dog is safe. Yeah. So, yes, we always have fun. But look, we're going to just play. We've been having a chat to Katie Underwood and we thought we would like to play one of her amazing songs, Beautiful. And hopefully we'll have an update as to what she's up to later on the show. Yeah. So after this, then we're going to get into Davina's story. Can't wait. So here we go.
Beautiful by Katie Underwood. What a beautiful song. You're on RPP 98.7, Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone. And in the studio, we have the gorgeous, talented Davina.
Hey, Davina.
Hey, Nan.
We were just chatting, weren't we, while we're listening to Katie Underwood's Beautiful about how long we've known each other. We've probably known each other seven, eight years.
Yeah, I think it's that long.
Yeah, and we connected through your tribe. Of wonderful women who have all supported each other since, I think, primary school, hey?
No, we actually met at high school.
Was it high school?
Yeah, so there's a group of seven of us who are very, very close still. Mm. It's almost 25 years since we graduated high school. And Vicky introduced you to a very good friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine, Michelle, who at that stage had lost her...
That's right.
Baby daughter.
Yeah.
In really tragic circumstances. Mm. And I had seen Shell struggling with that loss and that grief for probably a year until she was referred to you, Nan. And I spoke to her the day after. Actually, I think we went out for dinner and I saw her the day after she'd spent some time with you. And for the first time I saw some lightness in her. And it was as if the grief, although I think it will always still be there, it was as if the grief had lifted from her. And I said to Michelle, give me this woman's name. I need to meet her. You know, obviously I don't have a story that is as dotted with tragedy as perhaps some others, but I just needed to connect with you. I felt a real soul need to meet you. And that was the start of our friendship. Really.
Yeah, and it's been one heck of a ride since, hasn't it?
It has, indeed.
We've had a lot of fun.
We have.
Yeah. So, yeah, I consider you the right brain lawyer. And when we say that, what we're talking about is someone who, you know, really has a high ability to achieve in the academic arena, but also has a visionary ability, yeah, that can see where people need to go, who can connect people. You're a massive connector, aren't you, of people who've got like-minded ideas.
Yeah, it's really my passion. I love to, and people will call it networking. I don't see it as networking. Mm. It's about finding people who have a need and someone who can help fulfill that need and just connecting it. It's really, that's my thing.
That's good.
So let's make it about you today, hey? So tell us, when did it all start or where did it all start?
Where did it all start? Okay, so I was born overseas, born in Malaysia, spent the first 5 years of my life in Malaysia. So I was born to parents of mixed race and mixed religion. So my father is half Chinese, half Sri Lankan, and my mother is Chinese. My father is Hindu. My mother is Christian. Mm-hmm. So 5 years in Malaysia and migrated and started school in Australia. And I distinctly remember my first day of school, so started prep in Australia. Distinctly remember my first day of school. My parents were both working, so my auntie took me off to school and she got the time wrong, so I was late.
Oh, great. No.
Great. Excellent. Start, right? First right. day of prep and I'm late. So she drops me off half an hour late. So the new kid, right, who looks a bit different, walks into the class, sit down, and I look around and I realise that they're learning the alphabet. They're learning the letter A, and I could already read by the time I got to school.
Mm.
So I was very confused about what was going on. So I think for me, the start.
Yeah. What do you mean by very confused as to what was going on?
Well, if you think about it, you've spent 5 years of your life in a different country, in a different cultural context, surrounded by family, and you come to a completely new country. With a different education system. Now, I spoke English as a first language, so it wasn't a language thing. It was just, it was really about that kind of disconnection and trying to work out your new context and how do you process that as a five-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Mm.
So that's really, I suppose, where it started. And I think like lots of Australians, my story is probably defined a bit by being a migrant and being new to this country and really about trying to find an identity which fits and respects where you've come from and your traditions and your beliefs to being able to be an Australian, because I consider myself Australian.
Mm.
You know, if I go to Asia or I go to Malaysia and I visit, people will say, where are you from? And I'll say, from Australia. I'm Australian. But how do you manage to integrate that concept of being Australian with, you know, having a different culture or having different beliefs or having different religions behind you? Mm. That's really probably where it's all started, I would say.
Mm. And particularly, I guess, when everybody else there, you know, you're five, you turn up and everyone else, really, not everyone, but a lot of them don't have those sort of challenges. Yeah, they sort of turn up and, you know, there's Mary and, you know, there's Jill and, okay, we're off, you know.
Yeah, but
for you, there would have been a lot more for you to process.
Yeah, and I think it's probably a story that is repeated generation to generation. You know, I look at the migrants of the 50s and 60s from Europe and their struggle to establish, and then, you know, the late 70s and early 80s with Vietnamese refugees coming in, and then a wave of Asian migration, and then later into the 90s and to the early 2000s when you have Africans coming in. So I think it's a story that is really very Australian, that those waves of migration and then the integration. You know, what would Australia be if we didn't have the European migrants?
Be bland.
Well, we probably wouldn't be wearing so much black and drinking so much coffee, to be honest, in Melbourne particularly.
And also the food, different food that we can experience here is just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
and even movies.
Movies, yeah.
Yeah.
And we're all the richer for it, but each each migrant's story, I think, brings its own challenges and its own... And I think people find a way through and find a way to integrate. And that's... I think that's the real beauty of this country and the opportunities it gives. But from an identity perspective, finding your... the best version of you was probably the biggest challenge for me.
For sure.
Because it's hard to even find yourself living, being born in the same country, finding your own identity, let alone...
You buy a lot of self-help books, I think.
Yeah, so exactly. Right. So it cost me a fortune, lots of therapy to find out who I am.
It's so true.
So, you know, it's double the challenge, I reckon.
Yeah. I mean, that five-year-old, she, you know, gets to school. And I guess your intention of why you're at school would have been quite different to the other kids.
Yeah, I think, look, I don't know if it's cultural. I don't know if it's something that's particular to my family. I doubt that. I think it is very cultural. And I think when you're a migrant and you realise whether you realise it at a conscious level or not, I think you understand that your parents have made a really big sacrifice.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And so you feel this sense of or this need to do the right thing and to achieve and make the most of all the opportunities that you're given. So I think even as a five-year-old, I knew that I needed to do well and I knew that studying was the key to being successful.
Why did your parents come out to Australia?
So the social and political situation in Malaysia was difficult at the time, and so they understood that the best opportunity for, I've got two older brothers, for the kids was to come out here and give us the opportunity to have a really good education and have successful careers. Lots of Mum and Dad's friends sent their children overseas to study, whether it was to Europe or to Australia or to New Zealand. Mum and Dad knew that they didn't have the financial capacity to do that. And luckily, Mum's older sister had already migrated to Australia, and that was at the time of the family reunion migration policy in Australia. So we already had family here, so it was sort of bringing brothers and sisters over. So in that sense, I think I was really lucky. You know, I look at the stories of some of the refugees who come to Australia under horrific circumstances, you know, to escape a persecution.
Atrocities.
Yeah, exactly. We were lucky. You know, we made the safe journey on a plane and arrived in Australia to family. We had family here. And Mum and Dad were able to buy a house and set us up. But it was financially difficult for them.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Isn't it so different compared to our point of view? I mean, I remember my first day and all I could think about was, you know, where was the jumpy board? You remember that board you used to jump and jump, you know, made that sound?
Yeah.
It was very simplistic in terms of our intention of what was success on our first day. It was simply to, you know, make some friends and have a laugh. I mean, you basically look straight at the playground and decide whether you like it or not.
Exactly. It was about making friends, I think, that was the aim, not reading the alphabet.
No, but for you, you're already ahead of the game. You already could read. How difficult was that, you know, kids were just starting on their education journey, but you probably would have been meeting like grade one, grade two standard?
I think I was confused. Like as a five-year-old, I was seriously confused about why we were learning the letter A on the first day. I distinctly remember that feeling. But and then I also remember being probably in grade two or grade three and correcting this other student's work. I'd be sitting next to the teacher.
Because you're bored. You're just looking for something to do.
I wish I had have had you in my classroom. It would have helped me.
I wish I could have had your brain.
I could have copied your homework and everything.
I would have let you too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Mind you.
I could have gone to university if I had you beside me.
I know.
Stop it. Stop it, the two of you.
Maybe
stop
I could go to university now.
It's not all that's crazy.
You could do my essays and everything.
Yeah. We'll pay you.
Yeah.
Side business, okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Not that you really want that, but that's anyway. Right.
Writing essays.
I reckon she could do it in her sleep anyway.
Yeah, so basically you really had to, it sounds like you had to sort of dumb it down just to sort of, you know.
I think I was really lucky. I had, and all throughout my my education, I've had really supportive teachers who've kind of just handed me different books to read on the sly or, you know, given me other things to do.
You're probably a lot more mature than your average bear. Like, you know, and what did you want to be when you grew up?
That's a really good question. What did you want to be when you were five?
Yeah.
When I was five, I think I probably wanted to be a doctor, like all good Asian children.
There's a lot of them out there.
Doctor.
Did you play doctors and nurses when you were younger?
I did. The tragedy of it is that I'm really bad at science.
Right, okay. Damn it. So that was never really going to work.
No, it really wasn't. Yes. So that dream went. I think at one stage I wanted to be a hairdresser. That was quickly knocked out of me.
Yeah.
I think I wanted to be a mechanic also. No, and strangely enough, it was because of Kylie Minogue on Neighbours. Oh, do you remember?
Yes.
And there was a news story yesterday.
I remember she used to wear those overalls. You know, the overalls with
And there was a news story yesterday about the numbers of mechanics in Australia. Something like less than 1,000 versus female mechanics versus, you know, tens of thousands of lawyers. Male mechanics.
Male mechanics.
And they were saying actually that when I'm so off on a tangent, when Kylie Minogue was on Neighbours as a mechanic, the number of female mechanics increased dramatically. But
that's what happens. Anyway. Become a role model.
Yeah.
See, people are going to be listening to you today and going, I want to become a lawyer when I grow up.
No, actually, probably by the end of the show. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Let's just see. But, yeah, so, okay, so basically study, you know, kind
so
of.
Primary school.
I feel like you're a bit of a racehorse where they just had to pull the reins in. You know, a little bit through primary school, but at last when you got to senior school, I assume that the content would have become a little bit more challenging, a little bit more interesting for you.
Yeah, I had an amazing liberal Anglican girls school education. I was lucky enough to get a scholarship to Mentone Girls Grammar School, and I knew, funnily enough, I begged my parents to send me there. So even with the scholarship, the fees were going to be really tough for my parents to pay. And I begged them, and I knew no one going to this school. I don't know why I felt this desperate need to get into this school and have a girls' school education. But I begged my parents to send me there. Dad met with the principal, who actually recently passed away, but met with the principal and asked the principal if she could increase the scholarship amount. She went back to the school council and they agreed to increase it from a third to a half scholarship. So the deal that was struck was that my mother would work Saturday overtime in the factory, and that overtime money would go to pay for my education. Mum and dad had to sign a contract to say that they wouldn't pull me out of the school before year 12, and they signed it on the proviso that if the financial situation got too difficult, that they wouldn't be penalised if they did pull me out.
Well, that's a lot of pressure on you, though, even though you begged to go, but that's still a lot of pressure.
Absolutely.
I don't know what it was that made me need to go to this school, but
Well, let's find out. We'll find out. We'll go to a song and then we'll work it out in between and we'll let you know.
Okay, so you wanted the song Counting Crows?
I did.
Yeah?
I did.
Up All Night. I reckon this is about you studying all the time.
Up All Night, Counting Crows. You're on RPP 98.7, Your Story Counts with Simone and Nan. And we're heading for a top of 13 degrees.
Ooh, it is a bit of a chilly one, but we're excited because we're talking to Davina today, our right brain lawyer. She's been, you know, just nattering to us about her childhood and how she was an immigrant from Malaysia and she came across and her parents worked so ridiculously hard to get her to, you know, a school, a private school, which happened to be Mentone Girls.
Scholarship as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's right. A scholarship and, you know, and she really worked incredibly, ridiculously hard, already knew how to read and write at five. Found herself helping the teachers, basically, to keep herself interested. tell us about how all that worked out. Obviously, a great education. Mentone Girls was fabulous for you. Not only did you obviously achieve incredible things there, but you found a wonderful group of friends.
It was a great education. Very, very lucky. I think I said earlier it was a very liberal Anglican education, so explored a whole lot of other stuff other than just the academics. Had a really broad religious education, so learned about comparative religions, the cultures that come with religions. In fact, when I was 15, I came home to my Chinese mother. That's important because we tend to eat a lot of pork. came home to my Chinese mother and said, please stop cooking pork. I think I'm Jewish. And that was because we'd done a whole semester of reading Jewish literature, right. Which I think is probably quite unique in an Anglican school.
Yeah.
Had very, very supportive teachers who always supported me and gave me extra work and I was such a nerd, okay?
Were you teacher's pet?
I was a little bit. I've always been a giant geek, right? Yeah. So I have to own it, right? Yeah. Let's be honest, yeah. I have to own it. And I knew that I wanted to get into law.
Mm.
Now, I probably knew that I wanted to get into law because it's the right thing to do, right? So we come back to that concept of the expectation and sacrifice and obligations. If you're a doctor, lawyer, or accountant, right?
Yeah, you're doing well.
And that's in order of preference, right?
Were you inspired by watching LA Law as a kid?
LA Law, a bit of Ally McBeal.
Yeah, Ally McBeal.
Which is probably closer to being as a lawyer, so I knew that I needed to get into law. Even the language reflects it. Knew I needed to get into law. Knew English was the key to getting the marks. So through year 12, probably in the last term, every night I'd do an essay. I'd get the teacher to write me an essay question and I'd write an essay two times and hand it in the next morning. Teacher would correct it, give me a new. So I had teachers who went above and beyond. And
so did you.
Giant nerd, that's what happens. And, yes, managed to get into law. But probably more importantly, as Nan says, I found my tribe there. Mm. So a wonderful bunch of amazing women, very diverse women in lots of different ways, but women who we've grown, we've grieved together, we've celebrated together, as a bunch of girls, we've gone through a lot together. So made it into the law school.
Wow. Fantastic.
Happy days.
Yeah.
Until you get there.
And then there's a lot of late nights studying.
A lot of sitting in the library studying. I didn't love it, to be honest. Actually, I hated it.
Mm.
Okay.
You can be honest with us.
I can be honest. No one's listening, right? No one will report this back.
Just the whole of Mornington.
I hated it. So I did a combined arts law degree and I loved my arts degree, right? I did ridiculous subjects. I did like ancient Greek mythology, feminist theories on ancient Greek mythology. I did this whole subject in philosophy about whether time travel was possible.
And is it?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's a whole nother show.
Yeah.
Next time.
Maybe you could have been the new Doctor Who.
Oh,
because they're looking, they've got a woman doing it.
Yes, into the TARDIS. Let's
so you missed your calling.
Maybe.
You would have been awesome, actually.
As Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I don't know if the outfit, can you change the outfit?
I know, you'd have to. They'd have to have high heels.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
But anyway.
Does he wear like a grey coat? It's not really my colour.
She's got a, I saw it actually on YouTube. She's got a grey coat.
And everything.
Yeah, she's got a hood.
Okay.
It's still stylish.
Yeah. Okay.
There's maybe a bit I could of, do it.
Yeah. You'd have to put your own thing to it, I think. Your own bling.
Yeah.
Your own bling.
A little bit of kitty. We're on a tangent again. What's going on?
Focus.
Can I say with a little bit of kitty?
Maybe.
She loves it, kitty.
Yeah.
But
so
anyway.
You're talking about time travel. And we've
time travel.
Into Dr.
Yeah. So, okay. So did this liberal arts degree, loved it, hated my law degree, hated it, and didn't understand it. I didn't come from a family of business people. Mm. So these concepts of kind of corporations and shares and were really quite foreign to me. So I took a bit of a leave of absence from law for a couple of years with really no intention of going back.
Did you travel or did you?
No, don't be ridiculous.
You went to the library.
Weight of obligation. No, I actually did a communications degree.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
So, yes, you do.
Yeah. Okay, so you studied more.
Yeah, so I studied more. Worked full time and studied more. And then decided that I should go back and finish the law degree so mum and dad would be proud and they could say my daughter's a lawyer.
Yeah.
So went back and did it. Yeah, tick, exactly. Went back and did it, then worked as a judge's associate, so an assistant to a judge. at the Industrial Relations Commission. And then after that, started practicing law. So joined a firm and
stayed there for a long time. Hey, yeah. How many years were you there for?
I was there for 12 years.
Yeah, 12 years. Mm. And you made a partner sort of around 35
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, I did. Yep.
So you must have found some passion in there.
I was really lucky. I was doing employment law. So that's an area of corporate law which is about people.
Mm.
So
right.
I think I kind of found my niche
in
the career that really wasn't probably what my niche is naturally.
Why do they make all these agreements so complicated and so wordy and so you
so
can't
we
understand
can charge
them?
You.
Yeah, I know. So confusing.
Yeah, it keeps the economy going.
I think there's a business for simplifying agreements.
Well, look, they've tried, but you've got to have a bit of expertise in there, otherwise you can't charge people,
wrong.
Mind you, the law is complicated.
It
having
is,
said
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's ever-changing, isn't it?
That's
never,
right.
Ever growing.
Yeah.
But you created such a, again, amazing in such a cold face world, you still created warmth. And that's what was, I think, is so special about you. There was a tribe of people around you, again, that happened to be your clients, but you sort of, you know, loved them to death, looked after them, and they rewarded you in the same way. But you had a big following, didn't you?
I was very lucky. I think I had a lovely group of clients and a lot of my contacts at those clients were female.
Mm.
So you're right. Yeah, I built a really special network of women who would support each other, a lot of cross-referrals going on, a lot of friendships that were made through that network and continue today. And I think it was about bringing a bit of heart into, you know, that kind of environment, which is often quite cold.
Is there still a glass ceiling for women in the law profession?
Yeah, I think there is. And they're probably unconscious biases that still exist and that you come up against. I've got a really strong thing about language and how language affects thoughts and behaviours. So I challenge people in the workplace often about the language that they use, and it's not language that would necessarily offend me, but it's about challenging the unconscious bias.
Yeah.
So having when you say "Hey guys," you know, addressing a group of people, I will correct them.
That's good. That plugs me in.
Yeah, things like
it's amazing.
I now work in quite a male-dominated industry.
Mm-hmm.
And often when we're referring to technicians, the automatic reference is to a male, so he will do that. And I will challenge and say, don't you mean he or she, because there could be a female technician. So I think language is really powerful in changing some of that bias.
And consciousness,
Wow.
Interesting.
That's just fantastic. Yeah, we need a lot more of you, I think.
That's right.
We need to clone you.
That's right.
Hey, we've got another song we want to put on because you particularly love this one. Lanterns, Birds of Tokyo. Here we go.
Lanterns, Birds of Tokyo. You're on RPP 98.7, Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone, and we're heading for a top of 13 degrees.
So, Davina.
Yes, Nan.
We have been nattering today about your story and an incredible story. As I mentioned before, young kid, you know, hit school, already way ahead of the game, found yourself at Mentone Girls with a scholarship and actually was 2 points off Ducks.
You had to bring it up, didn't you?
I know, I had to.
You
I'm
had
so
to
sorry.
Rub, the,
I know,
the wound is open,
it's
rub some
still
salt
there.
In, it's still
Damn
there.
It.
I know.
Damn
and,
it.
You know, then they
have you let it go?
No, clearly. No. I need some therapy about it. Because now they have runner-up Ducks. But
Ducks.
Yeah.
You even missed out on the runner-up Duck.
Do you reckon that's worse? Being a runner-up.
I think
you
should
have got a trophy.
It's second.
Of some sort. Yeah, don't think.
It's
yeah.
second.
I know, disappointment.
Yeah. But that's okay.
Thanks.
You know, we still love
Are
you.
Are you friends with the person who came first?
She's a successful.
No.
She's
kidding.
A successful doctor.
Doctor.
Yeah. I know.
And that's
list.
What you wanted to be,
yes.
doctor.
That's okay.
She stole my life.
I know.
That's what she did.
Yeah.
Oh,
you could be a single white female, sort of.
Yeah. Go and stalk. No. Take over her life.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Let's not. And then obviously got into law, you know, became a successful lawyer and a partner. And also, though, part of that wonderful school was that you created a bit of a Sex and the City scenario, didn't you, where there was sort of a beautiful, you know, group of women that you still talk to every day.
Every day.
That you share your lives with, that you travel with.
Yep.
You know.
And we have a WhatsApp messaging group and mm-hmm. it goes crazy most nights with random conversation. Yeah.
So beautiful bunch of women who all support each other. So now, you know, you've as we said, you've ticked all the boxes. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You've officially been
the perfect daughter.
So.
Yeah, perfect career. You know, and you know, done well. You know, successful.
Yeah.
Now what?
Now I feel like it's time to play a little bit.
Spread your wings.
Yeah. Strange you should say that. I've worked really hard with you, Nanette, about left and right brain integration, and exploring some of the right brain stuff. You know, that right brain lawyer concept. And I think I've come to the point where I don't want to be defined by what I do during the day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still a lawyer. I love my job. I love the things that I get to do in my job. So I'm no longer a private practice lawyer. So I've moved in-house now, work for a wonderful private company. And in that role, I do, you know, the lawyer stuff. So mm-hmm. I look at contracts and I give mm-hmm. legal advice. Mm. But I also do some other stuff, a bit of corporate comms, which taps into my comms degree that I did, doing a lot of work in the Indigenous space.
Mm-hmm.
So that corporate social responsibility side of things, mm-hmm. really, you know, I get to do a whole lot of stuff, have an amazing MD who is a visionary leader. So, you know, I love my 8 to 7 job, but it probably no longer defines me. You know, I'm. Someone asked me actually recently how I define myself, and I say I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm a friend. They're the things that define me, and I think for me, the real essence of my story is about I've had this journey to, and you know, it's had its challenges and it's had its highs and it's had its lows. You know, being a migrant, ticking the boxes, as you say, Nan, doing all the things that you're expected to do. But really it's about that piece about identity and finding your context, finding your tribe around you, the people that love and support you, and that's family that you're born to and family that you choose, so your friends. And then giving yourself that permission to do all the things that you really want to do. So, you know, fly off to Bali a couple of times a year and, you know, sit and watch the water or read a book.
Yeah, I love them.
I love it too. I buy a lot of self-help books too. Yeah. Still.
Sorry, I should have given them to you.
Yeah, you should have. I'm going to have to go to the Vinnies and find them, hunt them down. I do a bit of daily meditations. I've got this great app that has a different meditation every day. So I found time to slot that in.
Do you fall asleep when you meditate?
No, I'm really bad.
So am I. It probably doesn't
help that I do it in bed just before I'm about to go to sleep. You know, maybe if I did it late.
In the morning, perhaps.
Yeah. But my morning routine's crazy because I've found time to exercise.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, a bit of exercise.
Yeah.
So that mental and physical health. And then exploring all the stuff that Nan and I work on. So the spirituality, the intuition, you know, playing with cards, playing with crystals. And I still call it playing because I feel like there's a lightness and an energy to it that you don't get with the rigidity of study and education, you know. And there's no, for you know, when you're studying and when you need to get the marks, there's always, you're looking for a result. But when I'm playing, you know, I'm playing with my cards or I'm playing with my crystals or I'm playing with essences, there's no result. You're just being.
Just being you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, playing. Yeah. That's, I think that's.
It can still give you a result. They can give you a really amazing feeling or
Connectedness.
Connectedness or.
It's actually interesting you say that, because you're right, by playing you find yourself, you know, in that wonderful flow.
And grounded.
You know, where you've suddenly meet really amazing people that you just needed to meet at that time or, you know.
The synchronicities just keep showing up.
Yeah. Keep showing up because you're playing.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's where the magic happens. Yeah. That's when, you know, life is exciting and incredible.
Yeah.
Mm. Rather than feeling like you're just working all the time.
Yeah. You know? And I think particularly as women, we are challenged to that concept of busyness.
And doing too much. But quite frankly, if you're a mother and you're working and you're a wife and so on, it's exhausting and there's lots to do.
Yep.
Lots of responsibility.
Yep.
Mm. And so you can't help but be busy.
Yeah. And I guess those moments, aren't they? The moments in between the busyness.
Correct.
Yeah.
You've got to carve out that wedge. Mm. You've got to find that.
Yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that for me, that is, you know, up at 5 and...
I was going to say you'd have to be up early if you're starting at 7.
Yeah, I am. Early at the gym, which is, again, me time, you know, but it's probably why I fall asleep meditating at night. So.
But it's a beautiful time to be getting up at 5.
It is,
it's
actually
a very special, quiet, peaceful time.
I want to be that person that, you know those people that do yoga, sunrise what yoga?
Yeah, yeah.
I've got this dream that I'm going to be that person.
Well, I think you could be, for sure.
I want to try. Yeah, yeah. I might find some time to do that.
I remember you and I talked about, and we talked about melatonin. Do you remember?
Yes.
And you just got it in a second, which is why I love working with you. And that is, you know, melatonin really kicks in about 9.
Yeah.
And it's actually finished by about 3.
Yeah, that circadian rhythm. Yeah.
So if you really need to be sort of, if you really want to harness melatonin, which is a wonderful antioxidant and all those things, it's very important for your system. You really probably need to be in bed by 9.
Yeah. I'm in bed by 8:30.
Yes, you are. It's hilarious. Yeah. I send her a message and you just get nothing at 8:30. That's it.
Well, I do. I message you from Bree. I do have the phone still in the bed.
But, and then after 3, it's time to get up, you know, because the body said we're done.
I'm not there yet with that 3 o'clock scenario.
Particularly when it's winter.
Yeah, it is hard in Melbourne, isn't it?
Yeah, 7 o'clock, it's freezing cold.
But Bali would be different.
Yeah, indeed. For sure. Yeah. So for you, if you could talk to kids who are like you, who are out there now, where they've come from that kind of family environment where they know they can achieve, and they want to achieve for their family, but there is that sense of obligation and burden. How do they get the balance with that? What sort of advice would you have for them?
It's probably advice that you've given me. So let's share it.
And what was that?
It's check in with yourself. So I think everyone has a journey with their own challenges, but work to your own timeframes and never forget the things that can make you happy. And they're not necessarily the things that you think can make you happy or the things that society expects will make you happy. And you can find joy in lots of things. I found joy in a career that I never thought I would find joy in.
That's true.
But don't forget the really important things, which are your family and the family that you choose, so your tribe and your friends.
Mm, wonderful message. And crystals and...
Yeah,
angel cards.
Yeah.
An amazing person, Hey Simone. Yeah. Like, she's got it all happening.
She has.
Hey, she's got both sides of that brain just, you know.
Yeah, I'm very jealous, really.
I know. Yeah, we need to ask for better genetics next time.
Yeah.
Well, it's been wonderful having you on.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, for sure. We'd love to have you back sometime, hey. Yeah. All right. Well, that's us for today. I wouldn't mind putting on a little bit of, just to keep supporting our girl, Maxon.
Yeah.
Her album's called New World, and maybe we should listen to this song to finish off.
Yeah.
So I'll see you next week, Simone.
See you next time.